This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
President Biden and Chinese President Xi hold their first in-person meeting as state leaders.
They say that you shouldn't expect major breakthroughs on policy areas. What they do want is to open lines of communication a little bit wider than they are right now.
Plus, can China's market rally continue? And Republicans weigh leadership choices as Democrats celebrate retaining control of the U.S. Senate. It's Monday, November 14th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Six days after the U.S. midterm elections, control of the U.S. House of Representatives remains unsettled. Republicans appear on track toward winning the barest of House majorities, nonpartisan analysts said. But the final outcome hinges on races, mostly on the West Coast, that remain too close to call and for which results still might not be known for days. Meanwhile, Senate Democrats are celebrating after retaining control of the U.S. Senate. That's after Senator Catherine Cortez Masto won a tight race in Nevada over Republican Adam Laxalt, giving the party the 50 seats it needs for a majority. Republicans now face a crucial week in determining the future direction and leadership of the party. Tomorrow, former President Donald Trump is poised to announce that he's making another White House bid. House Republicans are also scheduled to vote tomorrow on whether to choose House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California as their candidate for Speaker if the party takes the majority. Some Senate Republicans, meanwhile, are pushing to delay a decision on whether to hand Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky another term as their leader, as allies of McConnell and Senator Rick Scott of Florida, who chaired the Senate's GOP campaign arm, trade blame for the party's midterm showing. Turning to Israel now, President Isaac Herzog has handed a mandate to Benjamin Netanyahu to form a new government as negotiations over a governing coalition gained momentum. Wall Street Journal correspondent Dov Lieber, who covers Israel and the Palestinian territories, has the details.
Well, Netanyahu has a bloc of ultra-naturalist and ultra-Orthodox parties here who make up this kind of nationalist bloc that he's been running with since the beginning of the election. And now he's basically working on creating a coalition agreement with them, basically dividing up who gets what ministry. There's some fear by former security officials who at least speak about it publicly that putting these guys in these positions could create more conflict than solve it.
Netanyahu will have up to 6 weeks to establish a new government. International students returned to U.S. college and university campuses in droves last fall, with schools recovering a portion of the enrollment they'd lost. International student enrollment was up 3.8% in the 2021-2022 school year, according to a report by the nonprofit Institute of International Education and the U.S. State Department. Though that trend is positive for U.S. institutions, the enrollment for these students is still far off of pre-pandemic levels, according to the report. And in other market news today, a trial over Elon Musk's multi-billion dollar pay package at Tesla is due to kick off this morning in Delaware. Musk is among those scheduled to testify in the trial, though a judgment isn't expected for months. Let's have a look now at Chinese stocks, which rallied on Friday in Hong Kong and were up again today, due in part to Chinese officials beginning to ease strict pandemic controls. So, does China's so-called relief rally have room to run, or is investor excitement premature? Wall Street Journal Heard on the Street columnist Jackie Wong has been looking at that question from Sydney, Australia, and he joins us now with the latest. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, thank you.
So tell us about this excitement as you describe it that you're seeing among many Chinese investors now. What form is it taking exactly, and what is driving it?
I think there are a couple of news. First, as you mentioned, is the easing of some pandemic restrictions. Another news came over the weekend is that they are also easing property restrictions, which has been another factor that have been dragging down Chinese markets too, because the housing market has been going down and then many developers has went into default. So I think both news have got investors pretty excited.
And Chinese investors, Jackie, are also looking to Washington, I understand, for some of their signals?
Oh, absolutely. Geopolitics have been a big issue in the past few years. Just recently, the Biden administration has imposed some really strict export control for semiconductors and equipment to the country. That has caused some of the country's semiconductor stock to fall. So as the two countries' leaders going to meet this week, I think investors are looking to see whether there are clues, whether the relationship is going to improve or not.
And so what is it going to take to keep this rally going?
I think the easing of the restrictions have been actually just pretty mild at this stage. But then I think investors are excited because they believe this is a signal that the Beijing is finally shifting its very strict policy on the pandemic so that eventually they may see a full reopening. But if we see more fine-tuning of the policy, I think investors will be more convinced that the country is moving towards reopening. I mean, the market at Chinese stock have been very cheap. They're down like 50% from maybe the end of 2020. So investors, when they saw some hints that maybe some of the factors like the pandemic restrictions, the property market restrictions have been easing, then they take it as a chance to really jump in. The market is also expecting the Fed to slow its pace of interest rate hikes. So that gives people more appetite to take risks at this stage.
That was Wall Street Journal Heard on the Street columnist Jackie Wong joining us from Sydney, Australia. Jackie, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll head to Bali, Indonesia, where the leaders of China and the U.S. are meeting today on the sidelines of the G20 summit. We'll get an on-the-ground update from that diplomatic gathering after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Chinese President Xi Jinping is meeting today with U.S. President Joe Biden for their first in-person meeting as state leaders. The meeting is being promoted on both sides as a chance to stabilize a U.S.-China relationship that has deteriorated to its lowest point since the 1970s. And that is just one of the closely watched storylines as leaders of the Group of 20 major economies gather in Indonesia to discuss everything from the war in Ukraine to inflation. Wall Street Journal White House reporter Andrew Restucia is at that G20 summit, and he joins us now from Nusa Dua, Indonesia, with the very latest. Andrew, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So tell us, what are both sides wanting to get out of this meeting today between Presidents Xi and Biden?
Well, I think to start, both U.S. and Chinese officials have really been trying to manage expectations for the type of deliverables that might come out of this meeting. They say that you shouldn't expect major breakthroughs on policy areas. There's so many issues that they disagree about, Taiwan, trade, technology. They're not expecting to have resolutions on those issues by the end of this summit. What they do want is essentially to open lines of communication a little bit wider than they are right now. After House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's August visit to Taiwan, the Chinese, in response, closed the door on a number of sort of formal communications channels between the U.S. and China. So firstly, the U.S. delegation is really hoping that China will relent and reengage in those discussions on everything from Taiwan to trade to climate change.
And I understand some pretty thorny geopolitical issues are also set to be discussed, including the war in Ukraine and North Korea. Tell us about that.
Exactly. Those will be at the top of the agenda. The U.S. is hoping to get China's support for its efforts to counter North Korea's nuclear ambitions and to get a strong statement from President Xi on the threat by Russian President Vladimir Putin to potentially use nuclear weapons in Ukraine. President Xi has in the past signaled that he is concerned about that threat from Vladimir Putin, and the U.S. is really hoping for a strong statement from him reiterating those concerns.
Andrew, on the topic of Russia, is there any reason to think China might actually reconsider its support for Russia amid the war in Ukraine, as the U.S. is hoping that it might?
I don't think they're willing to go that far. A top Chinese official just a couple of days ago said the relationship between China and Russia is rock solid. However, behind the scenes at a meeting in Cambodia just a couple of days ago, a separate Chinese official told world leaders there that China is concerned about the use of nuclear weapons. So that was a clear sort of message to Russia there.
And Andrew, in particular, what would the U.S. be looking for regarding North Korea?
Well, I think that they just want as much support from other countries in the region as they can possibly get. And the argument that the U.S. has been making to China is, look, you should help us because you don't want a larger military presence in the region. And, you know, if you don't help us, then that might be what's coming down the road from the U.S. side. And so it's a potentially compelling argument that the U.S. could make to the Chinese.
Just stepping back for a second, Andrew, before he traveled to this G20 summit, President Biden over the weekend also attended a pair of summits with Southeast and East Asian nations, aimed, I understand, at presenting the U.S. as a counterweight to China. How did that go over?
The U.S. feels that they had quite a bit of success, particularly on the issue of the war in Ukraine. They felt that they got quite a bit of support from East Asian and Southeast Asian countries in opposition to the war in Ukraine. China is a little bit more of a complicated issue. Many of these countries have really deep ties to China, and they don't want to see a protracted standoff between the U.S. and China. So we'll wait. We'll have to really see if those discussions paid off and if the U.S. president was able to gain more support in this fight to counter China's influence in the region.
Right. And meanwhile, you have President Xi, who's kind of on a concerted diplomatic push here as well, having hosted a number of foreign leaders in Beijing in recent weeks. And now, I presume, meeting with other leaders on the sidelines of the G20 summit. Is it clear how he is being received?
He is incredibly influential here, and it stands to reason that many people who have economic and trade relationships with China are not going to abandon them anytime soon. I don't think the U.S. is really asking them to, but you know, they certainly would prefer to have all of these countries more allied with them than China.
And finally, Andrew, what else should we be watching for as the G20 summit continues?
I think the biggest theme of the summit, biggest issue to be watching, is really whether the U.S. can keep the G20 on the same page. The G20, unlike the G7, is quite diverse, both economically and lots of other ways. Many of the member countries aren't on the same page. Obviously, Russia is a member of the G20. China is a member of the G20. Saudi Arabia is a member of the G20. All of these countries have very different priorities from the U.S. So we'll be looking closely to see whether they can come to an agreement on anything. You know, if the final joint communique, which is sort of diplomatic speak for the final outcome of this meeting, if there is agreement on much of anything. So that's still to be determined.
That was Wall Street Journal White House reporter Andrew Restuccia joining us from Nusa Dua, Indonesia. Andrew, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, among the many takeaways of the recent October U.S. jobs report was data showing that as the holidays approach, more Americans pinched by inflation and already working full-time jobs are turning to a second job to supplement their income. According to Labor Department statistics, the number of Americans working part-time jobs in addition to their full-time jobs increased by 6% year over year to 4.5 million people. Wall Street Journal reporter Ray Smith spoke to recruiters about the trend.
They're seeing increases not just in the number of full-time workers who are seeking second jobs, but they're seeing it in white-collar workers as well, especially white-collar workers at the entry level or who are junior. They are taking on part-time jobs, whether it be at a retailer or a restaurant. So it's not just blue-collar people who are typically the people that you see tending to take on second and even third jobs. But inflation is so high and the cost of living has risen for so many people that for many people, it's the first time in their professional careers that they're considering or actually working a second job.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal.
Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.